warning.
Warning!
Now for a word of caution.
It's time to step into the danger zone with your host, the danger himself, Chris Danker.
Chris Danker.
Indeed, time it is, Intro Man. Welcome back into the Danger Zone, 13 episodes deep, lucky number 13. And I know I say this a lot, but today's conversation, this is one of my favorites for sure. I'm talking to Gerard the Completionist, content creator, G4 host, just all around great dude, wrestling fan, a guy I actually first met at a wrestling show through Xavier Woods, a.k.a. Austin Creed. We get into all those stories and a lot of really interesting stuff in this episode. I guarantee you, if you have any inkling of wanting a future in content creation, gaming, podcast, anything in those spaces, some of the stuff we talk about today is really gonna hit home. And it's probably some stuff that I wish I had heard before I started doing content creation and whatnot. So that conversation is just so good. And we got a special Tuesday episode today because, as I've mentioned in the past, oh man, trying to schedule a show around wrestlers' schedules is a bold move, and it is ever changing, and it's tough sometimes. You know, I was very consistent with back to back, you know, wrestler interview episodes, and I was hoping to keep that string up for a while, but you know, because of how schedules work, it's going to be basically the original plan going forward, which is going to be a combination of, you know, wrestling, gaming, all these other interests that I'm finally able to squeeze in now. So it's, you know, I think we're going to reach a good balance, because anytime that I'm able to talk to someone, A, in the wrestling business that I respect and that, you know, I know is going to be a good conversation to have, I'm always going to jump on that and be down for it. And at the same time, people that I respect in these other fields that I friggin' participate in, I'm always going to want to talk to them as well. So I got a lot of great ideas coming up. I got a lot of great, oh man, I'm waiting on a few yeses that could potentially be game changing, but a lot of really cool stuff coming up that I'm looking forward to. Thank you guys so much for the support on this podcast, by the way. All the Patreon stuff has been fantastic. Thank you guys again for being patrons and for supporting this show financially, because as you know, this show ain't making no money. This show ain't making no money. I just call people up and we have conversations and podcasting is, you know, I don't have ads. I don't have any of that. So the Patreon support is greatly appreciated. Thank you guys so much for that. And if you didn't know, it's $1. Yeah, $1 gives you access to every video version that we've done. So as of today, later today, when episode 13, when this episode goes up on the Patreon, it's going to be 13 video versions of the podcasts, you know, for just one buckaroonie a month. I think that's pretty sweet. And of course, the Dark Match tier on top of that, which gives you bonus content and other bonus things and whatnot. I'm not going to squeeze too much more information into this podcast. I'm just going to tell you this right now. This is, it's show week. It's show week. This Saturday, Jacksonville, North Carolina, Deadlock Pro Wrestling, Chris Danger re-debuts, but this time, you know, in the real world. I've said it before, it's very Freddy's New Nightmare-esque, you know, the aura has escaped into the real world, and we're going to cause some chaos, and we're going to wreak some havoc, but in a good way, but good havoc and good chaos, because you know how Danger is, you know what he's about. But at the same time, I'm keeping a lot of stuff close to the chest. A lot of people are making a lot of assumptions about what they think I'm doing going forward within the wrestling business. I've purposely tweeted out a bunch of like cryptic-ish stuff, like not being very specific about things. All this stuff is very much on purpose because I'm playing this very close to the chest because I want this whole next chapter to be special. And to be, if it goes the way that I have it pictured in my head, it's going to be a wild ride. It's going to be a wild ride. Some people have asked me, I'll give you this much. People have asked me like what my goal is, Like, why am I going inside the wrestling business? Like, why don't I just stay on the outside and just make videos and make content? Like, why do I want to potentially get hurt or potentially, you know, whatever, involve myself in these situations? What is my goal with that? My goal is literally this. To tell the kid who's making his CAW on his, you know, PlayStation or Xbox right now, and he's working on his fucking moveset, and he's like, oh, man, God, one day I wish this was me. That's for that kid. This is for that kid. I want to inspire that kid to go do what they want to do. That's number one. Number two, I caught myself. I want to make a lot of people a lot of money and give a lot of people a lot of exposure that don't currently have it. I'm sure there's a lot of people who are like, oh my fucking God, this influencer piece of trash thinks he belongs in the wrestling business. This is no different than, you know, than a Paul brother boxer or whatever. You know, people, I've already seen I haven't even done anything yet. And I've already seen people be like, oh, another one of these type of things. And it's fine. If you want to think that, that's cool. I will tell you this, though. Pro wrestling is a little bit different than every other form of entertainment or sport. Sports entertainment on the planet. There's nothing like it. There are a lot of ways you can participate within the business on screen and off screen that don't involve you having to break your neck every night. That don't involve you needing to be 275 pounds greased up so you can walk in somebody's office and they can go, oh, yeah, you look great. No, I don't give a shit. No. Anything I involve myself in, I want to entertain whoever the fuck is there to watch. I want them to walk away being like, yo, that was fun as hell. That dude is great. I can't wait to see him again. And like I said, put money in people's pockets. I want the wrestling business to flourish. So I hope, if nothing else, that anybody that has those inklings of feelings of like, oh, how's this any different than any other shit ass influencer thinking they belong in a world that like that they haven't paid their dues in and whatever. And like, I get it. I 100% understand. I will tell you this, though. I have a pretty decent track record of how I think about wrestling and my approach to wrestling and how much it matters to me. So I hope that everybody knows by now that, yes, I'm going to go in and I'm going to do, you know, the fun things that I plan to do. And maybe people will like it and maybe it'll piss people off. And yes, of course, I want to like get myself over and I want to be over. Who the fuck wouldn't want that, right? But it's not just that. It's not just that. I respect this business too much that I want other people to shine. I want to help other people shine while also shining, because that's possible. I think people think, oh, I can't put other people over, or I can't talk nicely about these guys in my circle or, you know, in my genre or whatever because, oh, they're competition. Like, fuck that, man. I want to put a spotlight on good people, put a spotlight on my damn self, and show people that somebody like me can really bring a lot to this business. I truly believe that. Look, and people might disagree, and that's fucking fine, because the only thing I can do is bust my ass to prove you wrong, and that's that. So if you feel that way, and if you don't think that I belong or that I should be involved either on screen, off screen, backstage, front stage, whatever, just wait, man. Just wait, man. I think if nothing else, I hope I've proven that if you put a mic in my hand, I can make some cool things happen. So as long as people recognize that, I think we're going to have a fun time going forward with the stuff I have planned. And this Saturday, it all goes down. It all begins again. Second time, first time ever, second time ever, thrice in a lifetime. The final chapter, Remember 2K17? I called WWE 2K17 my career. Chris Danger, the final chapter. I was ready to put that motherfucker away forever. I did 3 years of Chris Danger, and I was like, no, I can't do this shit anymore. And here we are all this time later. This motherfucker will not go away. So the only way to feed this beast is to fucking unleash him into the world. So this Saturday, the world steps into the danger zone. But today, right now, Gerard the Completionist steps into the danger zone. I hope you guys enjoy the episode. Special Tuesday edition. Without further ado, it's time, baby. Let's hop right into it. My guest for today is a content creator across many platforms, G4 TV host, my man, Gerard Khalil, a.k.a. Gerard the Completionist. What's going on, man? Thank you for being here. I appreciate it.
Dude, thank you so much for having me. I've been so excited to see your podcast flourish. So the fact that you asked me to be on it is a true honor.
Oh,
so
thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. There's like, with this whole podcast vibe, which is new to me for the most part, you know, having it based around gaming, wrestling, entertainment, mental health, obviously, as you know, you and I both have a lot of friends that cross off a lot of those boxes. But having you particularly on here to shoot the shit about all that different type of stuff was a no-brainer for me. So like I said, I appreciate you taking the time. I like to start with also how I met my guests. So if I recall correctly, our first meeting was at like a random Airbnb in LA. I don't think it was at like anybody's house, right?
No. That's the second time we met. The very first time you and I met was at a random Raw in Anaheim.
Oh my God, that's right.
Woods had got you and I tickets. We met each other blindly, and immediately as we were talking, you and Michelle picked up on the fact that I was talking about, like, I knew Woods personally, and then, like, halfway through Raw, it wasn't a very good Raw, surprise, you and I just started clicking, and then we kind of pieced it together, and then I think we exchanged phone numbers, and then the next time we met up, you called me to do your charity stream with Woods.
Why did I think that was flipped? For some reason, I was like, no, the first time we hung out was at the charity stream and we ate dog food and we did all these other
that was rough.
Things that we unfortunately had to do, and we had a grand old time. But oh my God, I could have sworn that happened after that. But you just blew my mind with that. You're right. I was like, hey, I want to go to the show, and I rarely like ask to go to shows. Actually, it's so random that happened, because it's like I honestly go to very few shows. And he was like, "Oh yeah, you know, I'm getting tickets for my friend Gerard too." He's like, "Is it cool if you guys sit together?" And I was like, "Yeah, whatever. You know, friend of yours, friend of mine, whatever." And then like I realized, "Oh hey, like we all actually know each other. Like we're all actually in the same. Like it's not just some like, oh hey, whatever." So it's just such a cool experience, and I'm so glad you brought that back up, because that honestly slipped my mind for a little bit. But it's probably due to the fact, as you mentioned, that it was a Raw, and we tend to block those out of our minds.
Dude, okay, so two things real quick. One, I have to tell you, on the launch day of G4, Woods and I were celebrating with everyone. We're so excited G4's going off with a hitch. And Woods turns to me and goes, "Did you imagine several years ago when we both were eating dog food that we would be here right now?" And immediately I just like flashed back to that charity stream we did, and I was like, no, I had no freaking clue that we would be here.
Who would have? Like, this is something that, it's funny you said that, because that's like something that specifically that I want to touch on about, like, just kind of how things come together in the weirdest of ways and the ways that we all kind of ended up connecting.
Yeah.
Before I get too far ahead of myself, though, for anyone listening to this that might not be familiar with your work or, you know, what you do, who you are, whomst and what is The Completionist, if you will?
Oh, man, the big million-dollar question. So I no one really dubbed us this, but it's kind of like the original horseman of YouTube reviewing back when YouTube content creation became a thing back in 2009, 2010. Sure. Everyone remembers the first wave, which is Nostalgia Critic, Angry Video Game Nerd, Angry Joe, and then you kind of get the second wave generation, which is, you know, used to be JonTron, Peanut Butter Gamer, and myself. Mm-hmm. I was a part of the original, like, second wave generation of game reviewers way back in 2011. And so it's been 10 years. The whole concept of my show basically is every week I complete a game and I tell you my story of what it was like to go on that journey, the hundreds of hours, the pain, the struggle. Mm-hmm. And I try and wrap it in a viewpoint of interesting discussion, you know, whether it be game design, whether it be, you know, the journey of throwing yourself to the proverbial never-ending cycle of completion.
Sure.
You know, and before it was very much like, this is a review show. Now it's more like an essay show. It's more like the spiritual journey of completing a game and how it can change your perception of how you view media. And that's something that, you know, I was starting to get very burnt out. Mm. You know, completing a game a week, every week for 10 years just takes a huge toll on you.
Imagine, yeah.
And yeah, and then G4 came along and just kind of fell right into my lap. And it just, my passion for doing YouTube and for now this new set of skill of hosting and producing with the bigger team, with an official corporate company again, for the first time in 10 years, it just kind of brought it all back full circle for me. So it's been a crazy freaking ride, as you can imagine for yourself and what you've gone through.
No, sure.
But hey, I'm here. I did it.
You absolutely did. And the crazy thing is that I don't know the exact count. I think you probably do. Oh, it's used over 400 games completed from start to finish for the series now at this point.
Yeah, I'm about to hit 410 roughly, and at 120 of those, I actually recompleted a second time because I had a friend on the show and he had a very ugly public battle for several years, and just to kind of end the beef, I just said, "Hey, I'm taking all the videos down and I'm gonna remake those videos live in front of you on Twitch and YouTube." So, technically speaking, I've completed 500 and. And oh my 30 God. Games?
And then we're not talking, for people, just so they understand, we're not talking like start the game, do the bare minimum, get to the end, you know, beat the last boss, last level, and then you're done. Like, you literally go in and complete everything there is to do in the game. I can name maybe like five times that I've done that on a game. As far as, I'm talking about like, I'm getting everything. Maybe five times. How do you keep up with that? How do you do that? That's like you said, how did you not burn out on the third week? You know,
I think I have two analogies that I think you and your audience will completely understand, I didn't, until I met Woods, I didn't see anyone else who had the same energy that I have. But the first thing that fuels me is can I swear on this show?
Absolutely.
Fuck you energy. my whole life I've had people just punch and kick me down. And when I turned 23, when I started the show, I just kept being told by friends and family and loved ones, like, you can't do this. This is crazy. You're never gonna make money. You're never gonna make it. And like a switch, it turned on and I was like, you know what, fuck you. I can do whatever the fuck I want if I put my mind to it.
Hell yeah.
And that was the thing. I was like, it didn't matter. I turned into a psychopath. Yeah. I just said, I'm not going to stop until I reach the top. Mm. And I didn't reach the top per se, but I carved my own path.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that to me was so much more rewarding.
Sure.
And then the second thing, which I think everyone will understand, is I view The Completionist name as a championship belt. And every week I'm defending this belt online via my integrity, my ambitiousness, my tenacity to never give up. And so that has been a huge thing. Like, what happens when I don't complete a game? What happens if I miss a week of uploads? What happens if I just give up and walk away from YouTube? And that's been like my secret drive in my head of like, why the champ is here, I can't leave, you know? Yeah. And while I'm not the biggest YouTuber, and while it took me a long time to get to where I'm at, again, that path was so much more rewarding, knowing that I went through the super highs and the super lows that a YouTuber would go through. Yeah. Because nowadays, you wake up and a new YouTuber pops up and they have 10 million subscribers. You've never heard of them. You don't know what they do.
It seems like every day I'm like, who is this now that suddenly is this 50 million subscriber channel, like, out of nowhere? It's absolutely crazy. Yeah. But you're right. You've carved like such a great niche for yourself. Niche, whatever. But
doesn't matter.
I can agree 100%. Probably my biggest motivator is when someone says, you can't do that. And I'm like, oh yeah. Like, oh, you sure about that? Because you just saying that basically just solidified it in my mind that it's now going to get accomplished. So like, I level completely with that. And having so many, not so many, but at least at this point, a decent handful of content creators on the show at this point, all of them within, you know, the gaming space and all that. Everybody has always said how small of a world this whole genre and whole gimmick is. So how you treat people and how you talk to people and how you act around people, like, it gets around. It gets around. So people, you know, some of the people that sit there and tell you that you can't do stuff and you're never going to make it and, you know, your shit are people who are trying to do these great things themselves. And they're going to find out one of these days that this is a very small circular world, whether it's podcasting, YouTube content, streaming, all the aspects are interconnected. So with all that and all the things that you've done now, this is actually going back to something we started talking about at the beginning of the show. Did you ever think that creating these videos and putting yourself in this position, putting out the content that you put out, was going to lead to you now being, like you said, a television host on G4, doing all these things, working with these big people? Like, what was that? What was that journey like?
To me, first off, fuck no. I never thought I was going to come full circle. For me, G4 and what it means to be on X-Play, I feel like I've done that media circuit for so many people about G4 now, but it never gets tiring for me because it's so true. Before I graduated from college, I was working several jobs. I was working at MySpace back in the day when that was a website.
Oh, snap.
My brother was one of the top executives who ran tech. And then
Tom? Did you ever meet Tom?
Oh yeah. yeah.
Yo, I have. Tom is like this anomaly, and I was so into MySpace that I'm so mad that I never like crossed paths with him. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, he, for what it's worth, he's a chill dude, but he's very private for what it's worth.
Sure, and I think, and like, that worked out for him great, because he got his money and he dipped, you know, no drama, no whatever. It's just like, hey, Tom from MySpace, remember that guy? Great. Yo,
he got that Fox money, man. $600 million. Let him run away, my
dude. Get
in
and get out.
Sprint.
See you when I see you.
So I was working at MySpace. I was working at Best Buy as a retail employee selling video games. And I worked at Best Buy for 4 or 5 years. And that's kind of where my origin started as like content creation goes. I used to sell video games, and I was really good at selling video games. It was a true passion I had. One that, like, disgustingly so, could have crippled my life. I got so comfortable selling video games that I reached that moment of like, I could do this forever and nothing would change, and I'd be happy, I'd be content. Which is hilarious because I'm the youngest of five, and out of my family, everyone's a crazy entrepreneur with huge ambitions and goals. So for me to kind of have this melancholy, you know what, maybe I don't need to go into business for myself and start a company, I kind of achieved this like local nirvana. And a lot of that stemmed from just sharing my passion with selling video games. And it didn't matter if I sold $1,000 worth of stuff. I just cared that the kid, You know, my goal was that if a mom walked into my store and she bought her kid a Nintendo DS and she was like, I'm gonna buy him like, you know, Space Invaders 2. I was like, no, put that away. You want Mario. You want Mario Kart. You want your carrying case. You want, like, that was my jam. And I loved it. And in between the break rooms, I would sit and our Comcast rep would always play G4 on the TV. Mm-hmm. And we'd watch X-Play, Attack of the Show, a lot of American Ninja Warrior, mm-hmm. respectively. And I just remember watching Sessler and Webb and Pereira and Munn do their thing. Mm-hmm. And it kind of fueled me to how I designed my gaming tactics, because I really trusted Morgan and Adam and what they had to say. So for me, I was a massive fan of G4. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, one day I got into a huge fight with a manager, and it shook me to my core. It was what ignited, you know, that fuck you energy. Yeah. I was talking about just kind of came alive from me. Mm. And essentially, long story short, the manager wanted me to go sell a TV to a customer who was of Arab descent. Mm. And I am, you know, I'm half Lebanese, half Irish. And I can't speak Arabic. I wish I could. Mm. I plead every day. My mom is from San Francisco or SoCal, like San Diego style. So like, yeah, very white, very, very white. And my dad was like, knew five languages, grew up in the poor country, $20 in his pocket, the American dream, bootstrap style. Yeah. So but we grew up in a relatively well off area, the kind of area that is so well off that you're considered poor with how stupid money is in that area. Okay. You know what I mean? Okay. Like the 1% of the 1%. Like, my family was not poor, but we were considered lower middle class. Mm. Because at school kids would roll up in, sure, in $100,000 cars. Mm. and Escalades and Beamers, and it was just nuts. Yeah. It was just so crazy. But the notion is, if you worked at this one Best Buy and you worked there for a while, you kind of were like considered a privileged white kid in this area. Mm. And so my manager was like, go sell this Arab guy a TV. I went over there. The Arab guy spoke great English, mm, just wanted to get out and just get his cable.
Yeah.
Sold him his cable, let him go. And this went back and forth, the manager stopping him, bringing him back, stopping him, getting him back. And I was trying to sell this old lady an iPod Touch. Mm. She just wanted to get an iPod and go. And manager calls me over for the fourth time and goes, what's the problem? Why can't you sell the TV? And I was like, he didn't want a fucking TV. Mm. He wanted a cable. He wanted to get out of here. And he goes, he doesn't know what he wants. You tell him what you want. And I heard that and I was like, oh, so that's how we do business here. Like, that's how you see this. Yeah. Like, we tell people what they want. And then he just pulled me aside and goes, listen here, you little privileged piece of shit. You listen to me. Like, you do what I tell you. If you keep this up, you'll be working here forever. And that was it. The switch flipped. I turned to the old lady and I was like, ma'am, I'm gonna say something really rude. Excuse me. Turned to the guy and said, fuck you, I quit, you piece of shit.
Let's go.
Turned back to the lady and I was like, let's go get your iPod. So I like sold her iPod, sent her on her way. Mm. And then I immediately went home and I went to my dad. I borrowed couple thousand dollars in cash, went to the bank and exchanged it for ones specifically, because anyone in retail knows that if you buy anything in cash, if it's over a certain amount, the manager has to come in and double and triple count the money. So I came back the next day with thousands of dollars in ones, and I bought everything I could to do YouTube. I bought microphones. I bought capture cards. I bought hard drives. I bought musical instruments, soundproof boards. At the time, Best Buy had Best Buy Music. So I just went in and bought all this stuff for super cheap. And I went in and I made sure that motherfucker was working that day. And I made sure that when I checked out, that every goddamn one that came out of my wallet linked back to him. So he had to sit there and as he was putting that last dollar down, I said, by the way, this is my notice. I'm never coming back here ever again. And I'm not giving you 2 weeks. I'm done. You can penalize me. I don't give a shit. Mm. You're a piece of shit and we're done. And the guy was like, cool talk. And I was like, yeah, great talk. And that's what started it. I never looked back. And I had this moment of like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to try this YouTube thing. Mm. No one's doing it. I have a friend or two that's doing it, and they're making money on it. And so I made my first video. It got a million views in a couple of days, which was great. And then I made my second video, and it got 1,000 views. Ooh. And I quickly learned that this pendulum of sure. YouTube back in 2011 was very unbalanced.
Yeah.
And it took a while to figure out
sure.
how the sausage was made and how to continue to make that sausage.
Absolutely. It's amazing how incredible and how different everybody's story is. And I think that's like what you just said has to be probably like 95% of the world's dream scenario. It's just everybody, I feel like, I don't want to say everybody, but so many people have a boss that just probably treats them like garbage, and they would love to be able to just stand up and be like, fuck you, I'm out of here. So to be able to have that story is such a special moment, honestly. It's not like we're joking about it or whatever, but it's so big to be able to like grab your own life by the balls and say that I'm in control now. You know, like I'm doing yeah. what I say I want to do. Like for me, for the content stuff, like I wanted an outlet to just be creative in some way. That was different than what I had been doing before. But I had zero intentions of ever, ever, ever being a YouTuber. If anybody was like, hey, you're making YouTube videos, even when I was doing it part-time. Oh, you want to be a YouTuber? Oh, no. Oh, God, no, I don't want to be a YouTuber. Like, I never wanted that. Did you have a clear picture of what you wanted from that day when you put those items on the desk? Like, from that first upload, did you know this is where this like completion, obviously you didn't have the completionist yet, but you know, did you say, okay, I know that this is where I'm going to be pretty soon?
I definitely didn't know by any means. I didn't have like the true vision right away. I knew that. So the completionist and That One Video Gamer, my YouTube channel, that was like my fifth YouTube channel. When YouTube came around in 2005, I immediately was like, this is the future. There's going to be sketch comedy. There's going to be improv. There's going to be storytelling and short films. And I knew immediately that this was going to be the thing. And I knew more and more that was real and true, because on the MySpace side, and I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, fuck it, MySpace was looking to purchase YouTube at one point. And so
imagine that.
Imagine if Fox News purchased YouTube, right? Or Fox Corp, rather, News Corp. So that kind of escalated Google to purchase YouTube, and from there I was like, man, Google's got so much money, they're going to just make this thing a cash cow.
Yeah.
And you kind of already saw the Jake and Amir's and the Smoshes and, you know, the Freddy's kind of popping up and Annoying Orange, you know, kind of paving the way. But I kind of, you know, it's funny because you said, did you imagine yourself being a YouTuber? I didn't want to be a YouTuber. I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I wanted to be a business owner. I'm the one guy when it came to YouTube where I said, the content is my product. And it's not that I'm like not personal. I'm very personal. My content is all about my journey. But I knew from the beginning that I wanted to make money because I wanted to elevate myself. I wanted to be my own boss. I wanted to employ my friends to not have to work for assholes like I used to, you know, work with. A lot of the employees that worked for me were a lot of my friends that I went to college with who also worked at Best Buy, who also just got stuck like I did. And it was kind of like this ragtag, like, we got to fucking break this cycle, dudes, or we're going to get stuck here for forever. And so for me, I never wanted to be a YouTuber because there wasn't really YouTubers back in the day. I just wanted to be a guy who made something creative, who made it a business, so that I can convince your Disneys and your Hulus and your Netflixes of the world to come to me and be like, hey, here's millions of dollars, make your dream project. And that was kind of the catalyst for it. And while I didn't get there by any means, and history's not done yet, obviously. The path I took was so difficult and so rough, and I paid my dues that like it just made it that much more worth it.
Sure.
You know, just to kind of be like, I put in the damn work and it gave back. Nowadays, if you were like, start a YouTube channel, Gerard, I would say, you're crazy. I'm out. I would never do it in a million years.
Wow.
It's so different. It's so competitive.
It is very.
The algorithm, everyone talks about the algorithm. I've talked about it a fair amount, but it's just, you're not, it doesn't feel good. You're not feeling creativity. Mm. You're not fueling creativity. You're fueling a machine that's just shoveling in your content as rubble. Ugh. And you just hope that your audience is like,
that hit,
getting it as quick as they can.
Oh, that hit home so hard and so directly, just twisted. Because I know exactly how that feels. It's like I spent so much of my time creating these pieces of content and being like, hey, you know, this is my work and whatever, and you want to be proud of it. But then this game is created, whether it was, you know, and most likely on purpose. And you know, Google and YouTube
very much on purpose.
And now things need to be formulated a certain way. They need to be presented a certain way. So it's really hard to be able to fulfill those creative needs while like, oh, but you also remember, don't forget to do this and don't forget to do that. Oh, and this, oh, and that, oh, and this, oh, and that. So now there's seven things on top of whatever your initial idea was that you have to think of. Oh, now I got to do that too, and I got to do that too. So it creates these different, and I don't want to sit here and make it sound like I'm complaining about what I do, because I am absolutely not. I know damn well that I am very blessed to be in the position that I'm in. But, you know, it can be a little draining because you want to have that creative release, because that's why you do this. We don't, you know, you and I don't want to be at Best Buy. We don't, you know, we don't want to be crunching somebody's numbers behind a desk or something. We want to put our content out and entertain people, anybody who's willing to watch. And when a system or an artificial non-human thing, you know, cycles and makes certain decisions for you, it can be very difficult to navigate those areas. So it's funny you say that you wouldn't be a YouTuber again now if you asked, because honestly, I would probably say the same thing. I would probably, if someone came to me like, hey, no, like no previous subscribers, I can't use, you know, anything from before, just said brand new, want to start something new on YouTube, I'd probably say, no, I'll start somewhere else. there's other ventures or avenues I could travel down if I want to, you know, explore a little bit. That's not to dissuade anybody from, you know, pursuing those certain things.
No. I think you and I are in a position where we've been doing this for so long that our viewpoint is constantly shifting and changing, sure. You know? And I'm sure there's so many creators that we used to work with who are now no longer doing it. They left the platform. Mm-hmm. They moved on to bigger and better things. And it's just, it's one of those things where until you get to a position like ours, where you're just kind of stuck in limbo between jaded and grateful, it's so hard to feel like you're going up anymore.
Yeah.
You just feel like, oh, I'm stuck here, and you're too big to complain about the journey you just went on, and you're too small to make the value of the income that you should be evaluated at. And you just kind of feel stuck between this, you know, this almost middle class-ish style of YouTube. When I say middle class, I don't mean like, you know, that we're not making enough money, because we're making plenty of money. What I really mean is, there is kind of this 1% on YouTube of the people who make that YouTube
there are tiers.
Money. That,
there are tiers for sure. Yeah. And
yeah.
And I think people too, having a 1 point something around their million subscribers like you and I do, people say, oh, that's huge. That's massive. And there was a time where that was really huge. Not so much anymore. Yeah. So I get exactly what you're saying, because it feels like, kind of, even though you hear these bigger numbers, it's more of a, well, all of that is all just the middle part here. You know, you hear a couple hundred thousand up to 2, 3, 4, 5 million, and you're like, oh my God, that's amazing. And that's some people's dreams. Don't get me wrong. That's amazing. Yeah. And those are incredible accomplishments to achieve. But then when you get there is when you realize, like, oh, that all the way up there is where I'm trying to be. It's really different than what you expect. And it's damn, I feel like I said this a couple times now. It's probably leveling on the things that can be frustrating with this and can be a little bit of a challenge. I don't think I've leveled with anybody as much on this show yet so far as you, because you just have such an equal understanding of that. That's so hard to come by.
It, you know, at the end of the day, we just want to keep doing what we want to do, right? You know, yeah. You should be able to make any video you want. And the fact that the subscribe button is a suggestion is a very big problem. Mm. It's, you know, subscriber, even YouTube knows, right? It's like a part of their ecosystem to say, like, comment, subscribe. But the subscribe means nothing nowadays.
Yeah.
There's too many bad actors who came along and ruined the worth of a subscription. Now what truly matters is if they hit the bell and get the notification. Yeah. And even at that, that doesn't work as consciously as they thought it would. Because now what it's doing, it's making people go, why the fuck is my phone ringing? Because some douchebag online posted a new video. Silence that shit. Yeah. I don't want it. I don't care. Mm. So it's actively discouraging your audience to step away. Mm. And the only reason that you hope your audience comes back is because they care about what you're doing and they want to see what you have to say. And, you know, you and I both have millions of subscribers, right? But it's like, what is the value in it? Mm. You know, it's a golden plaque.
It's hard to tell.
Maybe,
right? It's hard to put into words. Like what does that mean? Obviously, as far as people, 1 point whatever million people, that's fucking amazing. And I will forever be grateful for that. Never in my life will I, like...
100%.
So 100%. Putting that aside for 1 second, the technical part of it though is where everything else gets messy, like you were saying.
Yeah, you know, you can be a YouTuber that has 100,000 subscribers and get 7 to 25 million views a month, and that doesn't mean anything for the subscriber thing.
Yeah,
but no one looks at the views; they look at the subscriber count, which is the inverse of what the ecosystem of YouTube is. So it's one of those things where the beast just keeps growing and we keep feeding it food.
We're like, it's growing and growing. And we're like, hey, we should probably stop feeding this. But we just keep on feeding it. Gotta do what you gotta do.
Keep on feeding it.
It's so important to surround yourself by people who are on the same wavelength, like we said earlier. And like, we're not on some, like, you know, echo chamber type shit where everybody's just repeating the same thing. G4, I think, also is a great example of that, where you have a lot of personalities, a handful of which, thankfully, I know pretty well. How did that opportunity come knocking on your door? And, you know, you've mentioned watching G4 so much in your past. Like, just on a personal level, what has that meant for you, too?
Oh, man. So the journey kind of started out as, in 2020, during the pandemic, we all saw that announcement video, the cryptic TV video that said, you know, G4 is coming back. And around that time, I started experiencing some severe health problems. I have a really rare blood disease called blue rubber bleb nevus syndrome. And basically, it's hard to describe, but my body doesn't know how to monitor its blood very well. And it creates these like micro blood tumors throughout my system. It was starting to get to, I've got dozens of procedures, lots of MRIs, and I kind of been putting it off taking care of it because I was like, oh, you know, I got to focus on the company. Mm. You know, I've got 20 plus employees. I have to focus on taking care of them. And I hadn't been the doctor in probably 9 years. Mm. I was really adamant about just taking care of my body. And then, of course, in the last few years, I gained a lot of weight. My thyroid was inflamed. I just was not doing great. Mm-hmm. And I was in a bad headspace because of the YouTube grind.
Sure.
So I saw the G4 announcement video. I had just switched agents and managers, and I saw it, and I almost wanted to be like, what if I just told Twitter that this would be my dream job? You know, what if I just started campaigning that? Mm. You know, what if I just did that?
Yeah.
And something in me told me not to. I was like, I had this inclination of like, if I really deserve this, the universe will come and tell me I deserve this. Mm. And so I saw Woods tweeting about it, and I knew immediately that Woods was going to be the face of G4. The minute that he said it, I was like, I don't care if no one's coming back. That dude will pilot the ship, and it'll be so good. 100%. People won't know what's coming.
Yeah.
And so, and what he was doing was so smart. And so I went to the doctors. I got some health stuff checked up, and my insurance just wasn't great. So I knew I had to take 6 or 7 months to like remove myself from that. Mm. But as I was doing that, my agent was like, hey, do you want to be considered for G4? And I was like, what do you mean considered?
Yeah.
They were like, well, you know, I, with my agency, was requested at your deck in the pile of people who are being up for this position. Mm. And I was like, you mean they asked for me? And he was like, yeah. And I said, well, you put that deck in there. Let's go. What are you waiting?
Yeah.
You give him the deck. Yeah. Let's talk. And so he gave him my deck. 2 or 3 months went by. And then I got an email from a casting director out of New York who was like, hey, I'm casting for G4. I'd love to interview you. And I was like, yeah. And so I started freaking out. Mm. I told my girlfriend, I'm so excited. And I like cleared my whole day. I'm ready to go. I'm about to jump on the call and my computer blue screens.
Oh my God.
And nothing is working. And I'm trying to get it back up. And I'm like 5 minutes late. I said, fuck it. I'll do it on my phone. I pulled out my phone. I'm Skyping with this guy. And he asked me a bunch of questions, what my favorite game was, what my journey was like on YouTube. And it may have been the worst interview I've ever had.
Oh, no.
It was not a good interview. I flubbed it really bad. And I thought it was done. I was like, all right, I guess I'm just not. I forgot what it's like to interview and do auditions for stuff. I just was not great.
Sure.
So a couple months go by and I get an email that's like, hey, they want to do a second interview with you. And I was like, okay, let's go. I'm down. And so I got a second interview, and on this like call list for this interview, it was like me and then like 15 other people in this call. Ooh. And I was like, oh, this is like everyone's on this call. Mm. So I jump on the call early, my tech is working, I'm on the call, and the casting director who comes on is someone I know. I know this woman. Her name was Grace, and she was married to my friend Lane. And I had just seen Lane at Evo and her. We had dinner together in Vegas. Mm. And so I'm like turning on the call. She's like, hey Gerard. And I was like, Grace, what the hell are you doing here? She's like, oh, I'm the one in charge of casting.
Wow.
And I was like, what? And she's like, yeah. The executive said they really wanted you. I told them I knew you, so here you are. And I was like,
remember that small world we talked about earlier?
So freaking small. Yeah. So I said, okay, great. Who am I meeting with? And she's like, oh, you're meeting with the showrunner of X-Play. And I was like, oh,
wow.
Okay, yeah. Mm. And so he jumps in the call, and we hit it off thick as thieves right off the bat. Like, we have the same like interests in games, mm. the same, like we live in the same near area. Like we just kept talking and talking and talking. He was like, well, it was nice to meet you. You're going to hear back from us soon and we'll go from there. And I was like, fuck yeah. Cool. Awesome. Bye guys. Yeah. Several months go by. I heard nothing, oof. Nothing, yeah. nothing. And then I get an email that's like, hey, you nailed your interview. They think you were great. They want you to do an audition. And I was like, okay, what does that mean? Can I get some context? Yeah. And they just went, they need to see you read off a teleprompter.
Mm.
And I was like, if they watch my show, they would know that I read off a teleprompter.
I am pretty good at that.
Yeah. And so they were like, well, do it for them. And sure. I was like, okay.
No problem.
So I wrote a fake X-Play review that then my team edited, and we made it like a one-for-one, what would a Gerard X-Play review look like in the same essence of Adam Sessler and Morgan Webb. Mm. So we did that. We gave it to them. A week later, they said, this was awesome. Now make a comedy reel. And I just kind of was going, what do you mean I need to make a comedy reel? And they go, oh, well, they want to see what your comedic chops are.
Mm.
And I go, okay, well, I've got a theater degree. I've been in hundreds of shows. Like, I can be funny. I have got a huge backlog of YouTube content that's funny mm. that I can edit together. And so I pulled clips from old TV stuff I had done. I pulled clips from YouTube stuff I collaborated with. And so, boom, I made this and gave it to them. Mm. They were like, awesome, cool. A couple more weeks go by, And this is like, give you guys the timeline. Now we're in December where they're doing the Thanksgiving anniversary special with Pereira, Munn, Webb, Sessler. And then they reveal that Woods has joined the team officially. Mm. And so in December, they were like, hey, we need one more thing. We need you to film a Attack of the Show-esque reaction to a video. It's like, okay. So I like improvised a few different takes of a few viral videos, submitted it, and then I heard nothing. Mm. I was like, all right, I guess they passed. The week of Christmas, I am in my house just sitting here, and I get an email from my agent that's like, it just, the thing said G4 TV shoot bracket games for 2021. And they made an offer for me to co-pilot a video with Adam Sessler. Mm. And they basically said, hey, this is your real audition. Work with Sessler. If you guys have good chemistry, hang tight. And I said, okay. And so we hop on this call. It was like literally Christmas week.
Wow.
In the middle of in between New Year's and Christmas. Mm. It's like the 27th, the 28th. I am on a Discord call. I got my OBS recording. I got my microphone stuff. And immediately the tech guys were like, how come you know how to do all this? And I was like, what do you mean? Like, what, this is,
bro.
What do you, we do this all the time. Yeah. And they go, yeah, we've had several auditions and no one knew what OBS was. No one knew how to use their microphones. No one knew anything. The shoot with Sessler lasted 15 minutes.
Wow.
I cranked it out, you know, 15, 20 minutes, cranked it out, uploaded my audio, my tech and everything. I was like, great, good to go. And the video came out. It did super well on the channel. The vibe was really positive. Everything was going super well. And then they started announcing the hosts.
Mm.
And no communication at all. Just zero silence. Mm. Just nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know, they started they announced Avli. They announced Frosk. They announced Golden Boy. They announced Code Miko. And they started announcing everyone. And in the back of my mind, I just was like, I remembered why I hated being an actor again. Mm. I had that inclination of, oh yeah, you put your heart and soul into your being to portray this role or this thing you desperately want, to then have a stranger just go,
nah,
whatever.
Yeah.
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 We'll pass. So I then had a 180. I was like, you know what? I'm going to get my health stuff taken care of. I'm going to figure it out. And I, you know, cause I was having really bad headaches. I was not sleeping great. Mm. I just wasn't doing good. And so I went to the doctor and he was like, yeah, you need surgery. You're losing blood every day. We have to burn some of the tumors in your system to stop bleeding because you're losing a lot of blood and you need to take vitamin supplements and iron supplements. And I was like, okay, sure. So I did that for several months and then I built up into this procedure. So I go ahead and I get this procedure and I wake up out of the procedure and I get a call from my brother and he's like, hey, G4 call, they want to make an offer. And I was like, hey, doc, can you up the morphine? I'm not ready for this. Put me back down. Put me back down. And so immediately they put me back down. Mm. I woke up the next day and was like, okay, what happened?
Yeah.
And he was like, they made an offer. They want you to join. And so it just became this like secret that I was sitting on for a few months because it took a while to figure out what my role was going to be. Mm. They were like, oh, you're going to be X play. Oh, you're going to be Attack of the Show, all this stuff. And so it took about 3 months to figure out paperwork and contracts and whatnot. And so June comes around, E3 time, the buzz is going, and they announced me, and I joined the crew, and I learned pretty quickly that for about 4 months in the beach house, I was the only one who was dedicated to X-Play.
Really?
Everyone was geared towards esports or Attack of the Show.
Mm.
So it was like Attack of the Show's coming back and you've got all these great people and then you have Boosted, this new esports show, and then there's X-Play with Adam Sessler and Gerard. and there was no one else. And I kind of was like, the internet's going to hate me because I'm not Morgan Webb. Can I get a mulligan here? Please. I don't want to do this alone. Like, this is not good. And they were like, don't worry, we're going to have more hosts for X Play. And so that's when the Black Hokage came in the picture. And that's when Frost was like, yeah, I want to double up and help out. And so, immediately after the beach house phase was done, just it was like lightning out of a bottle. We just took off. And the next thing you know, we're in that studio space. Woods is coming in every week. We're working on content all the time. And it was scary at first because there was no inclination as to what was going on. But the funniest part about all of this is once we're in the beach house phase and I'm working on videos with the producers and the showrunners and stuff, I talked with the showrunner, Lef, about the process of auditioning. Because I was like, man, I had like 9 auditions and all this stuff. And he was like, they auditioned you 9 times? And I was like, yeah, did you not know? And he's like, no, you were our golden throat. We thought you weren't going to do it. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, you were our number one choice.
Wow.
And we thought you were just too busy to do it. And I was like, no, it was the exact
we
opposite.
We need to work on this communication thing we got going on here. That's a wow.
So
what a story. That's an amazing story, an amazing journey from hearing about it till finally getting it. Literally waking up in a hospital and finding out that you finally got it. You got a lot of great ways of things happening. like the way you quit your job, the way you find out
some mysterious way.
They create these fantastic stories, man. It's so cool to see you thriving in all this. Like, I know that you're a good dude and a good person, and I love seeing stuff happen to good people. I love seeing good stuff happen to good people. Of all the things that we've covered so far and the different platforms you're part of, all the different things you're doing, it can get pretty overwhelming pretty quickly with constant words and stuff being, thrown at you. But something I kind of like to touch on with everybody that comes on, tell me what Gerard does to keep his mental health in check. And if you're comfortable sharing any experiences that you've had to overcome to be where you're at now, obviously, whatever you're comfortable sharing, obviously.
Yeah. Ooh, this is a tough one. Many years ago, when I started getting burnt out on YouTube, I started seeing a therapist again. Mm-hmm. Therapy is a very normal part of my life. I've had it since I was a kid. And when I started doing YouTube, I stopped because I couldn't afford it. Mm. And now I can. So I got a therapist. I have several for different needs. And I was talking to my therapist and she was just saying, hey, how are you dealing with the burnout of all this? Because you seem to be pretty tired all the time and exhausted. And I told her about the fuck you energy. Mm. I told her about the completionist championship belt that's in my mind that I have to defend. Mm. And she was like, well, that's some severe motivation. But where do you see yourself feeling that edge of uncertainty, that drive that's kind of coming out of you? And I just was kind of frank and said, I fear that one day I'm going to get forgotten about by the audience that put me here just because of how YouTube is working. And the only way that I can maintain my relevancy in this way is to play the greatest hits, talk about my favorite games over and over and over again to make people stay. Mm. And that sucks because that's not what this algorithm is. It's not what this platform is. The platform is to expand and grow and be creative and stress yourself and stretch yourself in different ways. And I just kind of found myself being like, if I, everyone sees me as a Nintendo influencer. Mm. Everyone's like, oh, you work with Nintendo so much. You're a Nintendo influencer. I didn't mean to be that way. I was just the first guy that was like, hey, I like Mario and Zelda,
First guy ever. Right? I like Mario and Zelda.
Yeah.
Damn, Mario, we gotta give him some stuff.
give him the football. Go. For me, I just had this like epiphany of I'm gonna run out of things I love to talk about. Mm. And then I'm gonna run out of steam. And so that's when my therapist was like, what do you hate in the gaming space? Like, what really like makes you angry? I was like, oh, I really hate like free to play models. I hate the premium model. I hate MMORPGs and how they manipulate their audience to keep playing them over and over again, and for better or for worse. And she was like, okay, let's start there. Why don't you like MMOs? And I was like, okay, well, they take your money. They expect, there's this expectancy that you have to deposit it each month, and you have to get your money's worth to feel like it's worth the investment. And you have to build a community of people that you trust. And over the years, my trustworthy list of friends that I've had on my list, and I'm sure it's the same for you, has dwindled more and more as your career expands.
Yep.
Yeah, it shrinks. And it's not because you are guarded or you're afraid of everyone. It's because you get the sense that everyone just wants something from you all the time. And you give and give and give until you go, oh, this is a one-sided relationship that I just don't want to be a part of anymore. Yeah. And I just found myself in those relationships more often than not. And so I didn't have any friends to play MMOs with, so I just didn't. And my therapist was like, you should try finding joy in the things you hate and just see how that changes your perspective. Hmm. And so immediately I went through the list of MMOs and was like, which is the MMO that I think I will like the most that's out there? Mm-hmm. And I picked Final Fantasy 14 Online, and I jumped in, I started playing it, and I immediately was blown away at how much fun I was having. Mm. It was a switch in my brain that just clicked and connected. And the things I had problems with were still there, but that was kind of my solace, right? Mm. You know, I don't buy brand new games when they come out, in the essence of your Assassin's Creed or your Madden's or your FIFA's or whatever, because that's not my kind of style. But my therapist was saying, hey, like, buy the thing that you hate and just see the other perspective of fun and where those conversations can be had. And the thing that she told me that just resonated was, she said, oh, by the way, don't talk about it. Don't make content about it. Mm. Don't share online. Just do it for yourself. And
how hard is that?
That was the key. It was so hard. It was so hard to just... But it was hard, but it was also really liberating.
Mm.
And maybe you feel the same way, and I'm sure your audience at large bugs you when they're, you know, when there's new WWE game news or anything like that, right? Is, did you see the trailer? Did you see the tweets? Yeah. Did you see the poster? Do you see the direct? Did you see the state of play? Did you see this? And that kind of behavior in the YouTube space has just made me depressed and sad, because it's not so much creating so much as it's, I need to have a reaction, a visceral reaction amongst the community at large of why we're celebrating games in this way. Mm. And then film myself doing the pog face, you know, for hours on end. And, you know, oh my God, this guy's in Smash. And it's like, I did that once or twice, yeah. and it was, because it was genuine. But I saw what everyone else was doing. And I respect those creators who do that. I respect what they do. But it made me not want to talk about the things that I love. Mm-hmm. It made me not want to share it. And having that, plus my therapist saying, hey, wise guy, you don't need to share everything all the time. That just gave me that mental click I needed to just kind of be okay with taking a step back from the conversation all the time.
Yeah, that's so huge, because, and again, relatable, because there is probably, I would say, maybe late 2019 into 2020, around there, somewhere around that time, like there was a point where I was pretty much ready to walk away. I was pretty much like, okay, I think I'm done with YouTube. Like, I think I've gotten out of it what more can I get out of it? You know what I mean? That's kind of where I was. The wrestling games are dry and broken and whatever, barely workable. Like all these so many reasons I had, right, to walk away. I just was not enjoying it anymore. And I never, ever, 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 ever took the time to just play shit for myself. Anytime if I turned on a console or my PC to play something, it was because I was getting ready to hit the record button and be on or stream or whatever. So introducing that back into my life of just like, hey, maybe today I'll just wake up and just fucking play this for an hour and just like not talk about it. And like the thing is too, is that I still have trouble with that. You'll even see me tweet sometimes like, oh, hey, check out this shit I did to like play. Cause it's such a weird feeling. I feel guilty for enjoying things. Isn't that fucking weird? I feel guilty sometimes for not sharing how I feel about something with somebody or with my audience. Cause like, well, they watched my content or they supported me for so long to put me in this position. So now I owe it to everybody all the time to give you all my thoughts and all of my opinions on every subject that exists in the world. And that is fucking draining. That could be very fucking draining because you're spilling your cup to fill others. And yeah, that's going to leave you with nothing. And
at the behest of others.
Yes.
At the behest of others. I'm serving them and not serving myself.
Exactly. It's not even like, oh, hey, I'll pour out from my cup and then take my own sip from it. It's like, no, I'm pouring out cups left and right and keeping none for myself. So that switch of like, listen, I'm going to start uploading what I enjoy more. Yes, obviously I need to work it and tweak it in a way that the algorithm is going to, you know, oh, okay, move it along. Like not stop me and ask questions. I feel like I got to like disguise my content. It's like fucking three like little people standing on top of each other with a big trench coat. That's what my content is. Just hoping to make it through the lane to like get by. And it's like, it's one of those things where, God, like, I love what I do, and I'm so grateful for the people that have supported me, and like you said, I'm sure you feel the same way, but if there's one piece of advice that anybody takes from the stuff that we've been saying this last little bit, it's that please, 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 number one, don't think that therapy is abnormal, or that just because you might need or want to talk to somebody that like, you're fucking weird, and you're, oh my God, you got all these problems, I gotta go to therapy, you're such a fucking weirdo, like, no. That is not even remotely the case. And anybody that ever tries to make you feel that way, you can have them come talk to me. Number two, I forgot what number two was, but number one is very important. And I hope you take, I hope you take the importance of all that stuff and mental health into consideration because man, it's a trip.
You know, it's funny, Chris, one of the things I love about you and your journey is Michelle and how much she loves you, because it's like,
just, what a way to word that.
Her tweets about you and what you're doing and the way she supports you is so great. It's just so like, you and I haven't talked. I probably talked to Michelle more than I talked to you. Like, let's be real. We used to text a couple times every few months to check in and say hello. But her infectious passion for you and what you're doing is so great, and it's so like, I'm never worried about you because I know she has you. You know, because you have her. You know, she. I know that like, if you're having a rough time, like, she's there with your dogs. And she's there to get through it.
I have a great support system, and I'm very fortunate for that. You know, she's definitely been my number one fan through a lot of shit. She's seen the highest highs and the lowest lows. She has seen me at my absolute lowest. And you know, she's still around, so that says something about how good of a person she is, and I'm sure she's gonna appreciate that shout out from you too, because I know she, just like I do, respects you and is very happy to have you as a friend. So God, with all that being covered so far, as we get to wrap up here, almost ready to wrap up, what's next for Gerard? What's some of your personal goals that you're working towards now?
I guess my personal goal, one that I can control, is to survive. I just want to survive. You know, I don't want to walk away from YouTube. I want the YouTube stuff to just keep going. You know, I don't need to go up. I don't need more growth or more views or more money. I just don't want it to go down. I wanted to sustain. I want to know that the 9-to-5 aspect of YouTube won't disappear as long as I'm putting in the work.
Mm.
And that unfortunately is not the case. Is that it's on a decline. And it's not just me. That's the hard part that I have to accept, right? Is that it's not just me that's going through this.
Yeah.
It's tons of people are, and not everyone's talking about it.
No.
Not everyone is confiding in each other. And so I think, to me, you know, I think like the immediate goal that I want is to survive, which is, you know, it's not to thrive, it's to survive. But I think the secondary one is to make sure that G4 stays back. You know, I don't want it to go away again.
Yeah.
You know, I could easily see myself, you know, staying with G4 for the next 5, 7, 10 years and fostering the future of gaming content on television.
Yeah.
And making television shows and films and things like that that will keep the generation of gaming going up and up more and more, you know, and hopefully help my friends make some money along the way.
Well, that would be great. And you got my number. Anytime you want to help me make money, I'm right here. You let me know.
Oh,
that you want me? Yeah. Why? Oh, yeah, sure.
I got you.
I would be. I will get raked over the coals if I don't at least ask you, what are your thoughts on current day wrestling right now? Like, are you keeping up with anything? Are you keeping up with AEW? Or what's your vibe like right now?
Okay, so my journey with wrestling is so interesting, Chris, because I grew up, obviously, like all of us did in the Attitude Era, right? I was super plugged in till about the rise of the Cena Nation.
You
know, 2006 is when I stopped watching. And then I would always just go to like WWE.com and read the results, because I didn't have cable in college and whatnot. But my passion for wrestling started when Woods did Hot Pepper Gaming.
Really?
Because I was that far gone. I was that unplugged. And I was talking about retro wrestling games a lot and talking about, you know, the Attitude Era, you know, for what it's worth.
Sure.
And when Woods was on Hot Pepper Gaming, I was like, holy shit, there's not only like, wrestling is still going, one, but two, there's like superstars that are actual YouTubers that are funny and smart and talented and know games. And I saw that video and immediately I was like, I gotta find out about this guy. And so I went down the rabbit hole of Austin Creed. I followed his path, his career. Seeing what he was doing, and you know, the fact that like he'd play the Final Fantasy Victory thing on the trombone, and like that would trend on Twitter. Like, he got me excited for wrestling again, and I had no idea who he was. And during the pandemic is when I went extremely down that rabbit hole. I got the network. I traced Woods' career for 3 or 4 years.
Wow.
And then and mind you, I've never talked to Woods about this. I think Woods for a while thought I was a weird fanboy.
Oh no.
Like I think he thought that like I was creepy and weird, cuz I was desperate. I smelled of desperation when I found out that Woods was in the gaming scene, you know? Like I was really, really desperate. So over the pandemic, he and I have been talking and playing games together and just, you know, conversing more, getting to know each other more. And then we played Among Us that one time or a few times. And that's when I met Claudio and Adam. Mm-hmm. And after we played that, Adam followed me on Twitter and DM'd me. He was like, "Hey man, like I love your stuff." Mm. And I was like, "What the fuck? Adam Cole likes what I do?" And that blew my mind.
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh, thanks, man." And then he was like, immediately Cole was like, "Yeah, when I was growing up in the indie circuit, you know, Ring of Honor stuff, I used to watch your videos while I was in the car or on the bus going to the next show."
Isn't that crazy?
And hearing that, Chris, my heart exploded out of my chest. I was like, holy crap, that meant so much that immediately I did the same thing for Cole. I went down the Cole rabbit hole. I followed his career, the stuff with Undisputed Era, like just seeing him thrive and it just, it brought, between him and Woods, they brought me back to wrestling in a way where I couldn't believe I was gone for so long that every time I got cable network just so I could watch Raw, SmackDown, and AEW. Mm. Like I wanted to make sure that I could ingest it again in a way that I feel connected. Unfortunately, these shows aren't always that great, so that's kind of a bummer, especially this year. Yeah. But you know, I think just having, and then Cody Rhodes messaged me on Twitter, and before he deleted his Twitter, he messaged me and was like, "Hey, I'm a big fan." And that was a shocker. That's so cool. Because I loved Cody's stuff. And then he was like, "Hey, can you help me design my TV room setup?" So I gave him like TV recommendations and console recommendations and things like that. And, you know, we were talking back and forth for a while. And so, you know, the fact that and then Selena Vega, like she found my stuff and started talking to me. And so to kind of see this like small wrestling world of people who are also influencers, who are also content creators, you know, to kind of gravitate towards, you know, guys like you and I, it was like, it was a trip and it gave me investment. It gave me so much more of investment, you know, when they're on TV, I'm there front row.
I agree.
I told Cole, the minute that you are in the title picture, the minute you're there, I'm there fucking front row. I'm going to make the biggest the biggest fucking sign that is, I don't care how much of a mark you call me. It's the biggest fucking sign. It's going to be right there front and center. And it was really cool because, you know, I don't know if you've seen Chugs' streams lately when he's streaming, but me and a team of guys I got together designed all of his overlays on Twitch.
Oh, nice.
That was all me and my team.
That's
so
awesome.
I wanted to make sure that like when you came to see Chugs on Twitch, that like you got the Chugs gaming experience.
Yeah.
And the fact that I was able to do that for him just made all of that worth it. So I guess the long answer, you didn't really ask for it. Yes, I am plugged into wrestling in the current zeitgeist.
So to answer your question,
I'm obsessed.
Yes.
Yes. I went to SummerSlam.
Oh, nice.
In Vegas.
Nice.
I went to SummerSlam in Vegas. That was very weird just because it was my first big event since the pandemic.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And I forgot how weird wrestling is in a live crowd when you don't have commentary. I forgot what it's weird how people just say whatever.
Crazy on a live show. Completely different. Whatever you think it's going to be like when watched on TV, you have no idea when you're there. The energy is unbelievable.
It's either like everyone's at 1,000% screaming and chanting and into it, or it's dead quiet.
Yeah. Those are the shows you don't want to be at, bro.
Dude, I was so in the audience like that same weekend, couple days before CM Punk returns to AEW.
Mm.
I'm in the audience for SummerSlam with my friends, and CM Punk chants start taking off. And then immediately you have other WWE fans being like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
He's in AEW. You got what you want. Like, get out of
here.
Shut
up. And shut up, okay?
it was surreal.
Yeah.
Like, I saw like fights break out.
Oh, yeah, there's very
amongst
much a
people. It was a lot. It was a lot. And but the weirdest part of the night, hands down, was Becky pinning Bianca in six seconds. That was crazy.
I don't even want to talk about that.
That was a shame.
I don't even
like
want to talk about
that. Like her music hit, we were all like,
yeah.
And then 6 seconds later, we were like, oh.
I will say though, I said like what they've done with. I haven't watched too much Raw over these last couple months, but I will say from what I have seen, what they've been doing with Becky, I think like I like where she's at in her role right now of kind of just being like a piece of crap, just like kind of talking shit to her. But I like what she's doing right now. But we talked about the gaming world being such a small world, but the wrestling world might be even smaller. I remember I told this to Cesaro when he was on the show. I was like, do you remember what you said to me the first time we met in a hotel room? And I was like, oh, hey, I'm Chris. He goes, oh, I know you. I watch your NBA 2K Playgrounds videos. And I was like, you fucking what now? He's like, oh, first of all the things I do, I think I've made like 5 NBA Playgrounds videos. You know what I mean? So like for him to pick such a specific thing of what I did and that'd be the first thing he told me when he met me was like something I'll never forget. I'll never, because you're just like, what? Like I make videos about what you do for a living to an extent. But you somehow knew who I was before I even walked up it. Like that, it doesn't always click sometimes that A leads to B and B equals, hey, people, you know, want to meet you. They want to know you. They want to, you know, you share all these interests with people and you start making these friends that, you know, you didn't think these people would be your peers, but you share all these similarities and you don't realize it until you get in those circles. Cause you kind of look at everybody like, oh, he's, you know, stars or whatever, but it's just like, brother, it's same as you and me, just trying to make a living to entertain people and, you know, try to do what they can to keep it moving.
Dude, I was at an airport going to a convention. It was like 8, 9 in the morning, LAX. You know how it is. Mm. It's awful. I am walking. I'm flying up to Northern California to go to this convention. And I went to my terminal. My terminal was shut down. They were like, walk across the other one. So I'm walking across the way. I walk up to get my ticket exchanged. And this dude walks up with like a posse of like 4 or 5 guys. And so he was like, hey, excuse me, man. Are you Gerard the Completionist? I was like, yeah, man. Like, yeah, it's nice to meet you. And he goes, dude, I'm such a big fan, dude. Your stuff is so good. The beard transformation and everything. Oh, that's so hype, man. That's so cool. And I was like,
they scream in an airport.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, dude, thank you. Yeah. I'm like really excited. Like, dude, thank you so much. And he's like, we got to get a picture together. And I was like, oh, are you kidding me? I'd love to. So we do the photo and he's like, hey man, keep doing what you're doing. And I was like, cool. And I'm like, what's your name? And he goes, I'm Cisco. And I was
What'd
like,
you just say?
I was like, what? And he's like, I got to go by. And then he went into security and I was like, wait, no, come back.
Cisco,
like,
Cisco?
I knew who he was, but like I was having a hard time processing what was going on. And so Cisco goes through security and I'm like, please come back.
Maybe come
like,
back.
Let's be friends. I love Drew Hill. Wow. I love the thong song. And so immediately I go on Twitter and I'm like, okay, I'm going to tweet at Cisco and be like, hey, thanks for,
hey
thanks
buddy,
for,
great to nice meet you.
Yeah. And so he follows me and responds and then like, through DMs, we started talking and hanging out. And since then, I got lunch with him in New York one time. He came to my charity stream in LA on his anniversary. That's how badass Cisco is. The dude came out and raised thousands of dollars for charity. Amazing. On his anniversary. He was such a cool guy. Cisco, one of the greatest of all time in everything. And he loves games. He's a talented artist. The dude can draw so well. He loves anime. Wow. And does a lot of great like Dragon Ball-esque type art. It's really sick. But yeah, if you ever get a chance to talk to Cisco, coolest guy on planet Earth, so kind, so humble, and so full of energy. It's just so great to meet him. But yeah, you were saying it's like so weird how our worlds work, and then that happened and I was like, what the fuck is going
exactly,
on, man?
Dude, just the way that these paths cross and the things that have, I know for me, and I'm sure you can agree, the doors that have opened because of this weird ass line of work, I'll always be grateful for. And the people I've met, because that includes, of course, you, Gerard the Completionist.
Hell yeah, dude.
Dude, it was so much fun having you on today, man. This just sitting down to talk to you. First of all, we need to hang out more. We need to do more stuff together. That's number one. Number two, though, for the people listening, let everybody know where they can find you at, where can they check your stuff out if they want to, you know, see what Gerard's all about.
Yeah, you guys can find me on YouTube at That One Video Gamer, which is my YouTube channel, or just search The Completionist. You should see a fist grabbing a controller. If you don't want to follow me there, you can follow me on Twitch. I don't stream as much as I used to, but I stream a fair amount. Or if that's not your boat, you want to see me in a more corporatized way, you can see me on G4 TV. Either on TV or on YouTube and Twitch or on socials, because everything just gets replicated and thrown out there. That's so true. Yeah.
That is true. It is everywhere. You are everywhere. And I'm very happy for you, man. I wish you nothing but the absolute best. And hope to have you back on in the near future, bro.
The pleasure was all mine. Thank you, dude.